CGM 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CGM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA Windsor on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Our first interview was a post-dated one, so some of the events referred to may already have happened. In this segment of our show, Prem Kaur will be telling us a little bit about cavernous malformations. So if you could introduce yourselves and tell me a little bit about your work in cavernous malformations, that would be great.
Hi, my name is Edith Kehoe. I am the Canadian lead for Angioma Alliance Canada. I do not have cavernous malformations. It's a medical disease that afflicts several members of my family, which is how I became involved with the association almost 10 years ago now. Prem?
Hello, my name is Prem Kaur. I am the Western Canada Coordinator for Angioma Alliance Canada. And so part of my role is to advocate, educate, inform, support people with cavernous malformations and their families and loved ones. And I'm also a person that has the disease of cavernous malformation. And yeah, that's a little bit about me.
So for those who might not be as familiar, tell me a little bit about how cavernous malformations can affect a person.
Sure. So cavernous malformations are abnormal small capillaries in the brain. They're very weak capillaries in the brain, which can ooze or bleed. And depending on the size, location, and the severity of the bleeding, it can cause a number of symptoms or side effects, ranging from headaches to seizures, to paralysis and other disabilities that would be associated with an acquired brain injury. Prem can maybe offer a little bit more from her perspective as someone who's actually got the disease.
No, that was a great explanation, Edith, but just a couple other things is, and to expand as well, some people may have some focal neurological concerns, which may include a vast array of things from numbness and tingling to doubled vision, impact their vision, weakness in an area of their body, especially depending where the cavernous malformation is located in their brain. And some people have one, which is we refer to as a spontaneous cavernous malformation most times. And some people also have a familial type of the disease, which has been identified to be a possibility for many patients. Also, sometimes patients who don't have any kind of bleed or oozing just may have a very large volume of cavernous malformations, sometimes referred to as lesions, in the brain. And by simply having those many in their brain, sometimes they experience some symptoms like fatigue, headaches, other sorts of symptoms similar to that.
So.
And unfortunately, probably the worst outcome of cavernous malformation is when they bleed into the rest of the brain, which is then therefore a hemorrhagic stroke. But that is like the worst case scenario.
So with all the side symptoms you mentioned, is there ever a risk of misdiagnosis or doctors labeling it as something else?
Absolutely. Cavernous malformations are not something that you can just see by looking at a patient. You can't diagnose just by observing. The patient has to have an MRI in most cases in order to diagnose the disease, because it doesn't show up on other types of testing. So an angiogram, which is commonly used when a stroke is suspected and might, you know, show that there's an aneurysm or that there's a blockage in the brain, will not tell you whether or not you've got cavernous malformations, because they're such small blood vessels that they don't appear on an angiogram. A CT scan, which is another very common diagnostic tool, will only show a cavernous malformation if there is an overt hemorrhage and if it's recent. So if you had a hemorrhage a year ago and you're only now having your CT scan, it might not show up. So the MRI, and even when we're talking about an MRI, we're talking about one of the more powerful machines, one of the more modern ones with a certain type of sequencing, is the most effective diagnostic tool for determining that someone has the disease. Oftentimes, people are diagnosed with cavernous malformations almost by accident. We call them incidental findings. A patient goes to see the doctor because they're having a problem with their hearing or their balance. Doctor probably suspects that they might have MS or some other kind of disease. They go for the MRI expecting that that's what it's going to be looking for and show. And instead, what they find is that they have a cavernous malformation. So it is often diagnosed incidentally, and the symptoms are really no different than what might be seen if you had any other type of acquired brain injury, whether that would be a tumor or there are other conditions called AVMs and arteriovenous malformations, developmental venous anomalies, DVAs. And the symptoms might present very similarly, likewise with an aneurysm. So a CCM is considered a rare disease. The data suggests that it could be anywhere from 2 to 8% of the population that has it. But really, most of the research has only been done in the last 10 to 15 years. So our body of knowledge about it and what doctors know about it, including specialists like neurologists and neurosurgeons, is really very recent. And so it's one of those fields of medicine where we're really just beginning to understand how the disease works.
So.
Those are great points, Edith. And one just thing I want to add too is that so the reality is too that the challenges can expand to when individuals are living in rural or remote areas. And, you know, I think about so this disease can at times impact infants, children, like all ages. And so I think about, you know, a child presenting with a headache in a remote area that may not have access to MRI, and that's why it's so critically important that with this rare disease that we, the work that we do and others to spread awareness and educate and support and advocate for people about the disease is just so they might know the possibility even. Because as Edith was talking about, for instance, as I'm talking about a child goes to an emergency room with a headache, could be a multitude of things. And if it's a cavernous malformation, the impact of that would be a totally different outcome than something else like causing a headache without the access to imaging and or specialists that have knowledge about this rare disease and that sort of thing. We are really looking at situations that could impact the treatment outcomes for these patients.
So are there any steps that those who suspect this might be a problem they're having can take, just in terms of education and preparedness?
It's a really good question. especially because I think it's probably not something that people would even be aware of if they didn't have a family member or a friend who was diagnosed with the disease. My husband was diagnosed 28 years ago. I probably wouldn't have known about it except that his nephew had been diagnosed a few years before that. And until then, I had never heard of this disease. As we said before, it's not something that you would, be able to look at a person and say, that person may have a cavernous malformation. So I think that the more that we as patients can do to educate ourselves about our bodies, about our health, about taking care of our own medical files is really critically important. And, the internet gives us a great resource in terms of doing a little bit of research through Dr. Google. And shows such as your own, Cam, are really important in terms of getting the word out about diseases like cerebral cavernous malformations. I know that when my nephew was diagnosed almost 40 years ago now, the first thing that his parents thought was, oh my God, my child, my baby, he was only 5 months old. They thought he was going to die. They thought it was cancer. And we've come a long way in the last 40 years, but it's still a shock for a parent with a small child. It's still a shock for a grown-up to get told you have something in your brain that maybe doesn't belong there, and it could hemorrhage, and it could cause side effects, and it could develop seizures or paralysis. It's very scary, and I think that the more that we can do to educate and inform people about the disease, the better it is. And the more that we can do to educate the medical system about it, because as I said before, many doctors have never heard of it, and when they do, that what they know is based on information from 30 or 40 years ago, so when they were in medical school. So it's really important for us to increase awareness and understanding.
Well, yeah, for sure. I'd like to thank you both for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure. Yep, sure can.
In this segment of our show, Elizabeth Attenberger will be sharing a little bit of her disability story. So can you tell me a little bit about your disability story?
Well, I was born with Williams syndrome. It is a chromosomal illness. I have had this ever since I've been little. I try to get out and do things as much as possible. There's a lot of things that do get affected by this chromosomal illness, like the heart and kidneys and spine and heart. So there's a lot that happens when you have this. As you probably know, people with Williams syndrome are very social. There's only 1 in 10,000 people that get diagnosed with this illness every year. I try to spread awareness through a group that I am with, and it's called Best Buddies. From it's done in the University of Western Ontario. It's a bunch of students that get involved with and paired with people who have intellectual disabilities. I try to raise awareness of not just Williams syndrome, but bullying as well. So I try to give back as much as I can to my community.
So with your diagnosis, what are some of the coping strategies you've used to deal with having the condition and still being out in the community, raising awareness?
I try and go for walks every day. I'm going to a group now for pain management, because I am having a lot of pain with my body and stuff. And I try to go to different classes, try to get out into the community. I'm also involved with a group called Hutton House as well. They are a great organization. They have different programs for like day programs. They have ladies group, they have men's group, they have diamond painting, pottery, all those kinds of things. So those are the things that I really enjoy doing. So going to those classes is a lot of fun. Unfortunately, they were not able to help me with my job journey. They just a few weeks ago, they decided that they were no longer capable of helping me with my job search. So now I've had to go to a new place called ATM. They are specifically involved with people who have disabilities, so having to start over, it made me very sad because I gave so much of myself and I felt like I was being given up on. And I guess I just felt really lost and really sad. But I realized that change is sometimes a good thing. Learning something new is always a good thing. So this is my opportunity to learn new skills, and who knows
so
what I'll be able to do. I just want to help people and let them know what it's like to have a disability and to maybe change their way of thinking, the way that they do think, because there's a lot of people that have the thought that they can catch things from us, which is not true at all. That's just a myth that's not even real. And I think by educating others, you change how they view things. I just had a friend the other day tell me how important it was that they were my friend and they got to know what Williams syndrome is and how they're very much inspired by me.
So I'm
curious. Those are the things that I look forward to. Those are the things that I hold on to when I'm having a rough time.
So in terms of your job journey, what would you like the public to know about a person with a disability's right to work? What would be the ideal outcome for you?
Well, the ideal outcome would be to find a good boss, someone that I can trust, someone that I can confide in, someone that is maybe more educated with disabilities so that it makes it an easier decision for them to decide to hire someone with a disability. I think it's a great opportunity for them to learn something new from someone else. They get to kind of see how we view the world and how we function in a job. Yes, we may have things that need accommodations and things like that, but all in all, if I'm able to get up every day, go on the bus, be responsible, be there and work and do my job, then that's what the most important thing is for me. And sometimes that can be really hard to find as a good employer, because a lot of people have that stigma. Again, it's someone that has a disability. How do I know they're gonna do the job right, or that kind of thing? So that's why it's important to have agencies that can be there to support you and to help you and to kind of educate your potential employers so that they have an easier ability to hire someone like us.
So, in that sense, do you have anything you'd like to say to all the employers out there who should look at the person rather than the statistics, so to speak?
I think it's very important for an employer to have an open mind and to kind of try and think, how would I feel if I were in their shoe? You need to put the shoe on the other foot in order to kind of understand where we're trying to come from. Because we do have skills, we're very smart. We learn, it's not like we're not capable of learning. So I think that's the thing that people need to realize. All we want is to fit in and to be accepted, just like we do in normal society, which is sometimes a very difficult thing to do as well, because of the way people judge us. So that can cause all kinds of problems where people become very isolated. They actually become more afraid or uneasy around people that they don't know. It makes them have social anxiety. I have that sometimes. So I guess the thing is that what I'm saying is it's important to give us a chance to. We're just as capable as anyone else. We just have differences because of the way that we're made. It's not our fault. It's just the way that we are. All we want is the opportunity to show you guys how capable we really are.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages. Stay tuned.
Did you know CGEM collaborates with clubs and organizations both on the University of Windsor campus and in the general Windsor Essex community? There are a bunch of different ways your group can collaborate with CGEM to help bring it more attention, but also make your current group project a little easier. We can schedule an interview to help the community learn more about your club or organization. Don't worry, the interview can be pre-recorded, so have no fear of misspeaking. If you're looking for a smaller way to advertise something special with your group, look no further. We can create PSAs for events, fundraisers, volunteer calls, new clubs, and more. We have you covered. Then there's events. If your group is struggling to get everything accounted for with your event, why not collaborate with CJAM? We can help gather volunteers, secure a venue, equipment, catering, and more. Save yourself the stress of setting up your event while creating a new connection. Interested or just have questions? Email us at info.cjmfm@gmail.com. We hope to hear from you soon.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA Windsor on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Prem Kaur told us a little bit about cavernous malformations, and Elizabeth Attenberger told us a little bit about her experiences with Williams syndrome. This next interview is a post-dated one, so some of the events referred to may already have happened. In this segment of our show, Nicole Daigneau will be giving us an update on her yoga program. So, can you tell me a little bit about your latest adapted yoga work?
Yes, Cam, and thank you again, as always, for this opportunity. As your listeners may or may not know, I've got a website that can kind of give them all of this information in a nice, concise place. So if they go to cocoyoga.ca, that's my website, cocoyoga.ca, and I now have also a Instagram page, which is new for me. So that's Coco Yoga Wellness on Instagram. So thank you so much. So that'll kind of give you guys a chance to, you know, find out where to register and all that kind of stuff. ICHA, the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, our classes are continuing on until the end of June. And then, of course, they start up again after summer break in September. Those are a great opportunity for people of all different levels, adults with special needs, to participate not only in yoga, of course, but there's also bocce and soccer and all kinds of wonderful events that take place through there. So I encourage people to go to my website and find out how to attend those classes, even this last couple of months till the end of June. That would be fantastic. We have so much fun. And community living camp has been ongoing consistently as well. Through community living, people can see me in a group format online. And as the nice weather comes more and more, we're going to once again meet outdoors in like park situations like we did last year and have some in-person classes. So just want to encourage people who might be involved with community living to ask about yoga and be just, you know, keep their eye out on my website and my Instagram for those upcoming events as well. I also want to share with you and your listeners that I am back as well in a private setting. Prior to lockdowns, I had an office in the Jackson Park Health Center where I had group and private classes and did my healing touch therapy sessions as well as the yoga. And that kind of all closed down when lockdowns took place. I ended up letting go of that office space. So I'm now recently back with a small space that I can invite groups, small groups, semi-private groups, and private individuals. So I've been really loving seeing a lot of my students who went to online during all those lockdowns. My special needs students, many of them consistent with their practice, but through the computer screen and with the assistance of their worker in their homes. But now I can see them again in a space. So I'm very happy to let people know about that. And again, it's all through my website that you can find out about all that. So, and, you know, just if you don't mind me just wrapping up, for anyone who's interested in taking yoga with me, who might not necessarily need those modifications. Anyone, now, I always do offer, no matter what type of class you're coming to, I always offer modifications, but my class is at the university, and you know, this is on CJAM, so I'm assuming maybe there's some University of Windsor listeners. Anyone in Windsor, student or not, can participate in the yoga classes that I teach there. And those spring sessions are starting up. So May, June is starting up real soon. It's going to be a 9-week session. Every semester there's classes there. So those have all been in person again. Now we're coming on to our first year back. So I'm excited.
So I'm curious, how have you seen the students progress through the classes within this past
session?
Well, like if you're referring to during lockdowns, is that what you mean?
No, I mean just in general with recent memory.
Yeah, so I'm very pleased always with the progress of my students. Yoga practice helps us to have better control over our body and its mechanics, better understanding of it, better consciousness of it. So as I think we've shared before in these wonderful interviews, some of my clients might have very little to no mobility, or perhaps have very little to no speech ability. And despite this, there is so much that yoga can do for the body, not only the hands-on assisted yoga that I help that kind of, you know, maybe an extremely stiff body, a body that needs a lot of assistance for moving. Even just the slight physical things that I can do assisting with my own hands. The work we do with the mental capacity, the meditative aspect, the remembering, the learning left and right, the responding to various repeated cues that as I see students, whether it's online or in person, because a lot of the vocalizations, you know, it just becomes familiar. So I'm seeing students now who, you know, and they've been practicing with me, some of them for a year, some of them for many years, but they have such a stronger ability to know right and left, to know how to help, for example, a caregiver to get dressed. So, and I try to share that with the caregivers often. What I'm hoping is that the wonderful stretching and strengthening that my clients are getting is benefiting anybody who's working with them in terms of, you know, getting in and out of wheelchairs or in and out of clothing, in and out of cars with their walker. Any kind of mobility aspect is really helped when you know your left from your right and you can respond to those kind of verbal cues, and also to be able to, you know, relax your right hand as you put the right sleeve on, and to be able to relax the left hand as you put the left sleeve on. Many of my students, when I met them, a lot of their muscles are very contracted, you know, hands balled in fists, elbows often always, you know, quite bent. And now I see, you know, that ability to fully extend an arm, and the arm that I ask for, I'll have your right hand, please. Sure. And to be given that right hand and for the arm to extend, I hope that that then helps their caregiver to have more ease in getting them dressed and things like that. I'm hoping that the work we're doing is bringing great, you know, quality of life to people. They're much more comfortable and relaxed and aware in their body. And the communication and interaction with others is wonderful because everybody is paying attention and listening and responding and working with each other. Here's my right hand. You know, it's a lovely thing to see, that kind of ease of the body and consciousness of the body. I think it's helpful to really have a feel of your body, no matter how much your body can move or not move.
So I'm guessing that, as you alluded to earlier, doing this in an outdoor setting would tend to have some extra benefits in terms of just peace of mind. Sort of sense.
Well, outdoor is always lovely just to have that fresh air, but the indoor classes, like the space I've created for my special needs students, is a lovely indoor setting as well. Of course, you know, it's lovely to be out in the nature, but really, as I've said for all these, you know, I've been teaching yoga for over 23 years, and I've just always said to all my students, you can do yoga anywhere. That's the beautiful thing about it. You don't need a fancy mat. You don't need a fancy anything. You just plunk down wherever you may be, indoor, outdoor, you know, in your car, on a boat, on a train, right? At the beach, in line at the grocery store. There's always an opportunity to sit or stand maybe a little bit more proper and balanced, to notice the sounds and smells, whether they're indoors or outdoors, to be more present in your setting, to be more relaxed with your breath, to have that body awareness, you know, awareness of your patterns. Am I always leaning to my right? Why does my right hip always hurt?
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this. My friends, I'm really grateful Elizabeth was able and willing to take the time to be a part of the show. But the fact is, when a person with a disability asks for the same dignity and respect
that anyone else would be afforded. Editors, our whole community. The fact is, if we don't speak to our own needs and those things which would make our lives better, people might not necessarily look and see that for themselves. Sometimes we have to be our own champions, our own advocates. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.